Watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Jim Mellett, number 61.
I get.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor.
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Time for your Phone Restore call of the day, brought to you by the good people at Phone Restore, phonerestore.com, and at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue, Phone Restore. This is where it's at, fam. Cole Kublik. We do not have a repeat winner in the Heisman Trophy.
Ah.
We have a new winner.
I am proud to announce that this year's Heisman Trophy winner is Baker Mayfield of the University of Oklahoma.
Wow. This is unbelievable for me, you know, being up here among these greats. It's something that words can't even describe unless it's them. I mean, God has put me in a position to have been so blessed, and a lot of the time, I wonder why, but it's such an honor, and to be up here, I really appreciate it. It's unbelievable.
Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman Trophy, and water is wet. That was not really a surprise. That happened on Saturday night, so much so that I didn't even watch a second of it.
Yeah, I had it on. I listened to a speech. I didn't watch much other than that. 732 first place votes. 2,398 votes in points in the voting. Bryce Love, second with 1,300 votes. He got 75 first-place votes. Again, Mayfield, 732 first-place votes. Lamar Jackson was third, 793 points, 47 first-place votes. This was the third highest percentage of possible points received, 86% since 1950. Only Ohio State's Troy Smith and Oregon's Marcus Mariota had more since 1950. So this was a an absolute blowout. First senior to win the trophy since Smith did it in 06. So it's a we knew it was going to be Baker Mayfield, and we knew it was going to probably be a landslide, and it was. Some other first place votes: Saquon Barkley with 15, Rashard Penny with 7, Jonathan Taylor with 2, Mason Rudolph with 2. Mackenzie Milton with 4.
Central Florida quarterback, yeah.
And Roquan Smith, 3 first-place votes.
Deserved over Mackenzie Milton, but okay.
And Kerryon Johnson did not get a first-place vote, but he did have 45 points, 14 second-place votes, and 17 third-place votes.
Well, I mean, he missed their games early in the season. And he did not have a great championship game because of injury, quite obviously. And going into the SEC championship game, he only had, 1,400 yards? That's not how you dominate and get yourself into the Heisman contention. But anyway, good season for him anyway.
Yeah, great season.
He's the AP SEC Offensive Player of the Year, so that works for him. They had a very good season.
He had a real good year.
Yeah, but Baker Mayfield, I'm surprised not a lot of people out there screaming about integrity after this. I thought this whole trophy was about being good at football and having the most integrity. And if there's anyone that's really sort of earned the scrutiny as far as not having integrity, isn't it Baker Mayfield?
He's run
afoul of the law. He's done stuff on the field antics-wise multiple times.
Yeah.
If there's anybody that's embodied that, Isn't it Baker Mayfield?
I think that's only it only comes into play when it fits.
Say it. A certain narrative.
Yeah.
When people wanted not to give Cam Newton the trophy, They threw it in. And I'm not a Barner here. I'm just on All Barn Radio because Cole asked me to do it every now and then. Got to give a little Bama perspective every now and then. But to be fair, they destroyed Cam Newton. Now, at the time, people thought that he was getting paid, which, again, proved not to be. But people left him off their list, off their ballot completely. A lot of guys.
It's a silly discussion because it's not on the trophy.
Baker Mayfield is grabbing his stuff.
Were you aware that that a lot of former winners don't attend, and that they are protesting the Heisman Trust and the board because they allege that they are basically misusing the funds and they're concerned about the future integrity of the trophy, not from the winner's integrity perspective, but just what the trophy is and what it's going to become, how it's being marketed, things of that nature. I wasn't aware of this. But there's like, I think there's 15 or 14 former winners that are not attending because of that. Now, some just can't make it. Like, I know Andre had to do a game the next day for the Texans, so he couldn't go. But
don't they make airplanes?
There are a lot of guys that are not attending because of that. I didn't realize that this was a big issue, but apparently it is.
Yeah. Listen, they know better than I do as far as how they think it's being marketed and how the funds of the Heisman Trophy are being. I've always thought that the Heisman Trophy is obviously it's a great award to get, but entirely too many people have the opportunity to vote for it. It's really kind of watered down as far as the prestige of it. The fact that media members can't make their vote public until after the vote is kind of stupid, which is kind of one day the reason I hope to get the vote, just so I can burn it down for that one reason. For that one year, I can burn my vote just to say, I'm telling you who I vote for every week.
I was really surprised that I didn't see Manziel Saturday night. Like, if you're Johnny Manziel, aren't you making sure you're front and center at this thing?
But doesn't he then become like a much bigger part of the story?
You got to try to stay relevant somehow, some way, moving forward.
But do you think that's him, or do you think that's the Heisman Trust?
I'm kind of wondering if it's the people there told him don't show up.
Yeah, because
they don't need the distraction, and this would take away from whoever's going to win it.
Yeah, they're
not that Billy Sims doesn't try to take away by yelling at the top of his lungs for half the award ceremony. So I mean, I did think before we get to 10 after tweets, it was intriguing. USA Today released their top Heisman Trophy candidates for 2018.
Yeah.
There's no better time than now, right, to look forward to next year.
It's fresh on my mind.
Number one.
Baker Mayfield.
Bryce, well, he's a senior, so he won't be back.
Doesn't mean
finally.
He won't come back.
Bryce Love out of Stanford. He's eligible to enter the draft. He could, but he could also return.
I want people to put money on him now just to see people lose money on that futures bet.
And there's an in-state quarterback at number two for USA Today.
Mm. Who's the kid at UAB?
Jarrett Stidham, Auburn.
That's not him. Who's the kid at UAB?
Three, J.K. Dobbins, Ohio State. Four, Jalen Hurts, Alabama. Five, Trace McSorley, Penn State. He's still going to be around?
Yep.
Six, Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin. Seven, Jake Fromm, Georgia. Eight, Khalil Tate, Arizona. Nine, Kelly Bryant, Clemson.
Well, yeah. I mean, expect a guy to develop further into this offense.
10, Ed Oliver, Houston. No, don't put him on the list.
I think if you look at the odds for next year, you know, a couple of ones are interesting. Kelly Bryant is interesting only because you know this offense is going to put up a lot of points and have a lot of chance for the quarterback to be able to throw the ball and put up a bunch of points.
Yeah, like Jake Fromm's not putting up the numbers to win that thing.
Hunter Renfro's gone next year. I don't know how you're going to get those numbers.
That's fair.
That's the only way you're going to get them. Secondly, Jarrett Stidham's an interesting name only because I don't know if he'll get the numbers. The team may be really good, and now put him front and center if he has like 220, 230 yards a game.
I'll give you two reasons.
He's got like a 15-1 interception to touchdown ratio.
Two reasons Jarrett Stidham won't win the Heisman next year. Number one, offensive line. And number two, there's no feature back returning. I mean, Cam Petway's going to have to come back and be healthy the whole year, and that might help. And there are people on Twitter who are hilariously telling me that Cam Petway should go pro. I'm like, he won't get drafted, guys. I've made my argument for Kerryon Johnson. Twitter has argued against that, saying he needs to come back, that he can somehow improve his draft stock. To what?
He's number one overall.
No, he's not improving his stock much more, and he risks injury, which he's already had a few of. And if Cam Petway leaves, he's not getting drafted. Sorry, guys. He wasn't going to get drafted. If he had a great year, maybe. What does he play in the NFL? What's
Left end?
I mean,
outside tackle?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I did see a really weird stat, though, concerning Bryce Love and the Heisman Trophy. Stanford has now finished second in the Heisman voting five times, a player from Stanford. They have 5 second-place finishes in the last 8 years. Gearhart, Andrew Luck twice, Christian McCaffrey, and Bryce Love. Crazy that they've been that close that many times and haven't been able to pull it off.
So. Maybe Stanford's a bunch of chokers. They're a bunch of choking dogs when it comes to the Heisman.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the thing. You know, there are very few things that I've been like really wrong about when it comes to sports. Like sometimes I'm a little wrong, but not way wrong. Stanford's one of those things. I sincerely believed that when Andrew Luck left Stanford, that was going to be a waiting disaster of implosion.
Then the program was going to collapse.
I thought Andrew Luck was that program.
Yeah.
And I thought he was the reason that they had any sort of relevance. And he's one of the reasons that they came back to relevance. But it has not been the case. Stanford somehow is a pretty darn good football program right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one of the very few things I've been really... And I would like to take a chance right now, real quick, to apologize to the city of Palo Alto. I want to apologize to the farm right now. You know, in Auburn, they have the barn. They have the farm in Stanford.
They need your apology.
I would like to apologize. I was wrong about you guys. You guys are clearly very smart and also have a good football program. And I apologize.
All right, let's get to 10 After Tweets, brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
Larry Williams, Tiger Illustrator, coming up in 8 minutes to talk Clemson-Bama. JD tweets in, who was the last senior to win the Heisman? It's Troy Smith, 06.
Troy Smith!
Nick Baumgartner tweets, oh, right, Michigan football had some visitors on campus today. This was from...
Saturday?
Yeah.
Shea Patterson was there. Just to throw that out there.
Shea Patterson...
That's an important one.
Posted a picture of himself inside...
the basketball game, wasn't he?
He's inside the big house as well, throwing some snowballs.
What?
Along with fellow teammate Deontay Anderson, a sophomore safety. So...
There's a chance...
Harbaugh openly recruiting Oxford, Mississippi.
Well, he's not doing it. He just happened to get there. I'm not sure. I'm sure they got there just from a... I'm sure they just wanted to go see Big Ten basketball at its best Saturday afternoon and see what snow was like, because you don't get that a lot in Mississippi. Jason Brock tweets, is it just me, or is the Titans announcer the most annoying butt on the radio?
No.
No. No, 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 no. Mike Keith is the greatest. Touchdown, Titans!
John Heyman.
Oh, we got one of those yesterday.
Yeah. John Heyman tweets, December 9th, sources, Yankees and Marlins have a deal for Giancarlo Stanton.
Mm-hmm. You know who they did not have to give up? Aaron Judge or Gary Sanchez.
Yeah. Johnny on a cell.
Hold on. That means the Yankees are going to have 700 home runs next year.
I hope so.
From 3 different guys.
I'm excited about baseball this year, actually.
That power lineup? Good Lord. How did Miami not get more of their prospects? Like, more of their current players are good.
To which Johnny on a cell responds, Aaron Boone's job description, don't screw this up. So easy, anyone can do it. Sanchez, Judge, Stanton, Bird, hashtag Murderers Row 2.0. It is...
I'd argue Bernie Williams is part of Murderous Row 2.0. And Bernie O'Neill, Tino Martinez.
Now, SB Nation.
Part of the lineup, juggernaut.
Tweets December 8th. It's happening! All caps. Shohei Ohtani is signing with the Angels.
Yeah. Can't wait to watch him not get watched.
Now, this is, if you guys are not aware of...
Everyone knows who Shohei Ohtani is, Cole.
He apparently is the next Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
He can bomb home runs, and
I mean, seriously, though, I understand maybe the hitting is a little bit different in Japan. Have you seen the dude pitch?
Yes.
Like, highlights of it?
Yes.
He's got some nasty stuff, and he throws like 99.
And the Angels are very happy with saying, okay, go ahead.
Why would, if you're going to pay that much money for him, why would you not say, do it all?
Here's what I need you to do. I need you also to pull tarp on rain delays. We need to get everything we can out of you because no one's going to be here to watch these games, even though it's you and Mike Trout. It's still going to be abysmal. But it's not about national TV ratings. It's about the local ones.
But I'm very interested to see how he plays in the major leagues.
Did you see the story that hit Hideki Matsuyama was giving him advice? He's a former Red Sox pitcher. About possibly going to the Red Sox. Clearly that didn't work out too well. I'm sure what Matsuyama said was, yeah, don't come here.
I didn't see, but was it made clear that he was steering him from Boston?
Wasn't made clear that that's exactly what he said, but he didn't have a good time in Boston. Boston fans hated him. So he probably didn't get a good experience from Boston, and he took Boston off his list.
I mean, I would think if you're a... I think you'd want to end up on the West Coast. I mean, you saw how Ichiro was beloved in Seattle for such a long time.
Closer to home.
Yeah.
Just a quick train ride over the Pacific.
I don't know about that, but... I tweeted out a photograph of my wife and my son meeting Aubie over the weekend.
Really? It all comes back to Auburn somehow. It's really? How do you do this? You're butt Aubie-ing.
Well, I spoke to the Lake Martin Auburn Club Thursday night. And so Friday, we stayed in Auburn. And then Friday, we kind of set it up where we could take my daughter to meet Aubie. And she completely melted down, like didn't want any part of it. And so I posted a photograph saying that we crashed a random classroom on campus at Auburn so daughter could meet. Obviously, she didn't want any part of him, but Judge did. To which Mark Oates responds, is that the wifey? Boy, did somebody outkick their coverage. Emoticon laughing face, tongue out. Emoticon crying face, laughing. Yeah, I think she did. I think he's right.
Well, you would do that.
Do you disagree? I mean, she definitely outkicked her coverage, right?
This is about as humble as you get, isn't it? Man, am I hot. You guys should see how handsome... I'm on TV. I am not fat anymore. I get shoes from Odell Beckham Jr.
That was a great day over the weekend. What a gift to come home to. All right, when we come back, Larry Williams from TigerIllustrated.com gives us an update on the Clemson Tigers in their future matchup with Bama next. Welcome back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Excited to welcome in Larry Williams to the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Larry Williams TI. He reports for the rival site TigerIllustrated.com. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning, Cole. Glad to be with you again.
What do you view as most different about this Alabama Clemson matchup this year as opposed to maybe the last two?
Alabama. Obviously, Alabama's defense, Clemson's offense. I mean, I thought at the time, and I think even more now, that the more time that goes by, the more we're going to look back at last year's Clemson offense and last year's Alabama defense as being two of the greatest in history at their respective sides of the field. I mean, just freaks all over the place on that Alabama defense. Obviously, Deshaun Watson and some incredible playmakers around him. Mike Williams, Jordan Leggett, Wayne Gallman. Just two incredible games the last 2 years between these two. A lot of turnover, obviously, since then. And so that's the really big difference. It's just all the studs all over the field. And what's really amazing, I had forgotten that a number of those Alabama defenders had come back for their senior years, you know. Reuben Foster, Tim Williams, Jonathan Allen, Ryan Anderson. I mean, how often does that happen? You know, with players who are that at that high of a level, not leaving early the NFL. I mean, that's really what made that Alabama defense so great last year.
Yeah, especially not at Alabama, a place where usually guys are ready to leave and oftentimes do. Larry Williams of TigerIllustrated.com with us previewing Alabama-Clemson 3, I guess. Defensively, after that D-line, which I've talked a lot about here on this show, I think most people now nationally recognize, is one of the, if not the best in the nation. How would you describe the rest of the Clemson defense, and especially maybe as to how they match up with Alabama offensively?
Well, where they're a bit different this year, and I think better, is out on the edges with Kendall Joseph and Dorian O'Daniel. O'Daniel, before this year, more of a situational player. He would come off the field when they'd be on more passing downs in favor of the nickel. This year, starting with that game against Auburn in the second game, Clemson sort of surprised Auburn, I think, because in their opener against State, they took O'Daniel off the field in their nickel situation against Auburn. They left him on the field and took out the middle linebacker, Trey Lamar, and so I think that surprised Auburn a little bit in that first game early on, and kind of an interesting development in that game. O'Daniel's been a monster on the edges this year. Kendall Joseph played middle linebacker last year. Now he's over at the Will spot. And so it has given them, I think, a different dynamic in taking away a lot of the horizontal stuff, in cutting down on some of those running backs leaking out of the backfield and getting a lot of yards after the catch. They've dramatically reduced in that area this year. And so, you know, I think that on the back end they've had some issues, and I think that if you're a Clemson fan, you're probably your biggest concern in this matchup, Clemson's defense against Alabama's offense. You feel really comfortable mostly, but the biggest concern would be that back end where, you know, it's kind of hurt them in the last 2 years, mainly O.J. Howard sort of leaking out of there off. You know, screen actions and getting a really highly aggressive defense flowing one way and then throwing the ball the other way. So, but overall, this defense, you know, as everybody knows, it starts up front. They just overwhelm people. Cleveland Farrell and Austin Bryant have been fantastic at defensive end. Christian Wilkins is Christian Wilkins inside. And now Dexter Lawrence, the key development right now, is after struggling all year with a foot injury and then an ankle, high ankle sprain he suffered against Georgia Tech. Boy, he looked as healthy against Miami in the ACC championship as he's been all year, and that is a big problem for Alabama on the interior, of course, because, man, when he's healthy, he's a load.
Very difficult to deal with Dexter Lawrence inside for that Clemson defense. Larry Williams of TigerIllustrated.com with us. I think one player most Alabama fans will be watching because of the previous two matchups will be Hunter Renfrow back at wide receiver. He leads the team with 55 catches this year. Wasn't sort of the guy coming in the last 2 years, but ended up making multiple big catches in those games. Is this offense very different without – you mentioned Jordan Leggett and Mike Williams, and they were guys right there with Deshaun Watson that I thought was going to maybe be a little bit too much to overcome as far as replacing in this Clemson offense last year. Just big catch after big catch in almost every big game for those two last season, including against Alabama. Is this a very different wide receiving core that Bama will have to deal with for Clemson this time around?
It is, and really coming into the year – my biggest question about this offense was, okay, you know, they played in a ton of close games the last 2 years, and you had otherworldly playmakers, and Deshaun Watson and Mike Williams. You know, Mike turned the 50-50 balls into basically 90-10 balls. I mean, he just throw it up in infinity, and he would go get it. Jordan Leggett, time and time again, including in that championship game last year, came up with big catches. And so even though they were talented receiver coming into this year. You just wonder, you know, how much is the loss of just grown man playmakers going to hurt them? They've done it more by committee. Ray McLeod has emerged as a legit playmaker. Deion Kane has had his moments, although he struggled some with some drops. And they've kind of struggled at times to get in sync with Kelly Bryant in the downfield pass game. Had some real issues with that over the middle part of the season, although they've kind of gotten that rectified lately in their last two games against Miami and South Carolina. But you talk about Renfro, I mean, he's just such a tough cover. And, you know, I think this year you've seen teams say, okay, on 3rd and 4 and 3rd and 7, we're not going to let that guy get open. The problem is when you double cover him or put a lot of attention on him, they got other guys who are emerging, mainly T. Higgins, DeAndre Overton, two big, tall receivers with really good ball skills. One instance that comes to mind is against South Carolina in Columbia, when that game was still a game in the second quarter, 3rd and 4 situation. Hunter Renfro is in the slot on one side. South Carolina has two guys chasing him all the way downfield. Well, T. Higgins is in the slot on the other side, matched up against a 5'7 corner in Jamias Williams, and sort of run a little inside fade route, throw it up to him. He gets by his guy, goes up and gets it for a big 40-yard gain, and they go in to score a touchdown. So I think that, you know, do they have those sort of, like I said, those grown man type playmakers like Mike Williams and Jordan Leggett? No, they don't. But I think you combine Kelly Bryant's ability running the ball as a dual threat type, and then you have these sort of new emerging weapons in T. Higgins and Ray McLeod and obviously Deion Kane. You still have a lot to contend with a defense that just stretches you so much horizontally and vertically, and is so patient and sort of picking its spots, and also one that's more powerful on the in the run game this year than it was last year.
Larry Williams of TigerIllustrated.com joining us. Larry, a lot of people would say 3 weeks, a month for Jeremy Pruitt and Nick Saban to prepare for a quarterback who, in the grand scheme of things, still a little inexperienced, even though Kelly Bryant has been the guy this entire season. Does it concern you from an offensive standpoint that Clemson going into this game will allow Alabama's defensive staff that much extra time to prepare?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would have to be your biggest concern going into the game if you're a Clemson fan, because, Nick Saban and Pruitt, pretty stellar track record there, and you give them time. I mean, you know, Saban is a master of getting into the head of an opposing quarterback. But, you know, when I look at Alabama from the outside looking in, I mean, clearly they're not what they were. Those personnel losses from last year, from that great defense, and also all those injuries. You know, I've been a little surprised to see them get pushed around a little bit on the interior defensive line in ways that you know, we weren't accustomed to seeing in recent years. You saw LSU do some of that. With some success between the tackles running the ball. You saw Mississippi State do some of that as well. And, of course, Auburn had some success running the ball. And so, you know, I think that the question I have regarding this Alabama defense is, you know, are they equipped to defend a spread offense with a dual-threat quarterback that stretches you so much across the field and down the field, plus some really good weapons at running back over the course of a long tempo filled game? You know, I think that's what sort of caught Alabama's defense last year, is that, you know, they more than held their own over the first three quarters, but then once that fourth quarter comes around, Clemson's offensive line started to really dominate an elite defensive front. So I think it's a great matchup. I certainly think that Nick Saban and Pruitt are capable of giving Clemson's offense a lot of problems, but you know, you look at some of Alabama's games this year, and like I said, you've seen some teams push them around a little bit. You've also seen some holes in the secondary that haven't necessarily been exposed as often because they haven't really faced that many high-level pass offenses that can really sort of attack that space. So it should be a really interesting matchup and a lot different from last year in a lot of ways just because of all the different personnel.
Larry, great stuff, man. Appreciate the time. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again approaching this semifinal matchup. But thanks for the time today. Have a Merry Christmas.
Likewise, Cole. Glad to be with you. Take care.
Larry Williams of TigerIllustrated.com joining the show, discussing sort of that Alabama-Clemson matchup. And I think that's the two sides of this game that are most intriguing to me. Clemson D-line against the Alabama offensive line, and one that hasn't been great in pass protection and not really dominant in the run game just up front, that group, and is going to rely on a mobile quarterback. And number two, how does Kelly Bryant react to a defense that has that much time to prepare for him?
Do you think this is heading toward another epic?
The more I look at it, yeah, I think so. I see certain pieces of this game favoring one side or the other, but I don't see the actual game really favoring one side or the other. I really think this turns out to be another sort of epic Alabama-Clemson matchup. I don't see either side really dominating all three facets of the game.
Yeah, not dominating. I don't see a clear edge that would give someone a comfortable lead, and that's fine. That's kind of what we want of these semifinals. Before we go to break, just want to remind people we get into the Cube Show Bowl Pick'em. It's on the Facebook page and Up Sports. It's also on our Twitter feeds. You can check it out at Arky Shea at Cube Show as well. I'm sure Cole will get that out there soon. You can just search for it on ESPN for Cube Show 2017. All the options for you to be able to, but check out, I'll have it out in a tweet literally during this commercial break so you can join in, win stuff, have fun. We're only on 2 days this week, and then we got bowl games coming up this weekend. So let's get after it, y'all.
Get with it. All right, we will get to a break when we come back. Jimmy Hyams updates us on Tennessee's new head football coach right after this.
Now I'd like to introduce to you Jeremy Pruitt, the head football coach of the Tennessee Football Volunteers.
The first thing I want to say is how honored and humbled I am to be recognized as the head football coach at the University of Tennessee. When you talk about tradition, I grew up in a small town in North Alabama, just on the Tennessee River. So you grow up knowing all about the University of Tennessee, where you're running through the Power T, Smokey, the great teams that Coach Nealon, Coach Dickey, Coach Majors, and Coach Fulmer put on the field. There was a time and place that this university was feared among the SEC teams. My goal as the head football coach at the University of Tennessee is to get us back to that point.
That's new Tennessee head football coach Jeremy Pruitt being introduced late last week. Jimmy Hyams joins us now to discuss just sort of how things are going in the transition taking place now that Pruitt has been named the new head coach. You can follow Jimmy on Twitter at Jimmy Hyams, H-Y-A-M-S. Jimmy, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Doing well. How has Vol Nation taken to Jeremy Pruitt as the new head football coach?
Very well. Very well. I think it's several things. One is they were just delighted to have a head football coach after 26 days of one of the most bizarre and incompetent coaching searches I've ever seen. The second thing is I think that they feel like if Philip Fulmer says it's a good coach, he brings more credibility than what John Curry would have. And so I think they felt comfortable with that. And then I think Pruitt said a lot of the right things at the press conference, a lot of things that Tennessee fans and boosters would want to hear. So I think he's been received very well so far.
And you look at the staff that Jeremy Pruitt potentially will put together. Are there names that you feel will soon be announced or that you feel are a good chance to end up in Knoxville with Pruitt?
I think that he's got about 8 or 9 already in the fold. I don't know. He's probably going to wait to announce it when he gets everybody hired. But I believe that Terry Fair is in the secondary. He's been hired. Will Friend on the offensive line. Tyson Helton to coach quarterbacks. Robert Gillespie is going to be the only holdover from the Butch Jones staff at running back. Kevin Shear is going to have linebackers, I believe. He's from Georgia. Tracy Rocker is also looked to join the staff. Chris Rump, Brian Niedenmeyer, and Chris Winkie. Those are the names that I believe that he has already hired.
I mean, just some of those names right there already would make it a really good staff within the SEC ranks when you look at the experience and what those guys have accomplished other places. Jimmy Hyams with us, afternoon host of Sports Talk on Sports Radio WNML. In Knoxville, Tennessee, joining us, talking Jeremy Pruitt's hire. When you look at how Philip Fulmer made this decision and what it came down to, a lot of us believe that it was between Mel Tucker, Jeremy Pruitt, and Kevin Steele. Is that the news that you're aware of? And why do you think Philip Fulmer finally ended on Jeremy Pruitt?
I think it did get down to those three. He interviewed more than that. He talked to, or had a representative talk to, at least a dozen coaches. And so he pared it down to that list. He conducted interviews in several locations. The last few interviews were done in New York, where he was at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony for Peyton Manning. I think that Pruitt won out in part because he's a little bit younger, 43, compared to Kevin Steele, who's 59. So I think that's one reason he won out over Steele. The other thing I think that Fulmer was looking at bringing in a defensive coach, if you look at Tennessee, of their eight SEC losses this year, seven of them came at the hands of head coaches who used to be defensive coordinators. And I think that Fulmer looked at the group that he had and thought, I need more toughness in this program. Toughness has not been in the Tennessee program in years, and a defensive coordinator is more likely to bring that. So I think that was a part of it. Now, I'm going to guess on this other one. I'm going to think he leaned a little bit more toward Pruitt than Mel Tucker, because about half of Tucker's career has been in the NFL, and there's some thought that Tucker might be more of an NFL guy than a college guy, or might jump to the NFL if he had an opportunity. That might have been a factor, but I don't think this is a factor, but I do find it interesting that Pruitt grew up 65 miles from Fulmer's hometown of Winchester, Tennessee. I don't think that had anything to do with it, but the proximity I thought was interesting.
Visiting with Jimmy Hyams, follow him on Twitter at Jimmy Hyams. What is your understanding of how Philip Fulmer became the Tennessee athletic director?
Well, there were several things that were going on. First off, with John Curry, the previous athletic director, there was the failed attempt to bring in Greg Schiano. And while I will say this, I think that he was treated very poorly by many in the Vol Nation, because we don't have any real indication that he did anything wrong at Penn State. But there had been a tie there because somebody had said he might have seen something and might have been involved. It was third hand or hearsay. But once that got out, the reaction from the fans, the boosters, politicians, it was underestimated by Curry. And I don't think Curry had a second plan. So then he went after Mike Gundy. Then he went after other coaches. Then he offered the job to Dave Doran for some reason. This guy was 15-25 in the ACC. And then he seemed to go rogue. They called him back in. He went out to see Mike Leach, the Washington State head coach. There had been speculation that Curry had actually tried to interview for the Washington State AD job, which we've not been able to confirm. And with all that going on, I think Tennessee said, we've had enough. This has been enough embarrassment for this search. They pulled him back in. They named Philip Fulmer the athletic director, and they suspended Curry with pay with the intent to fire him for cause. So insubordination, I think, is what they're going to use as the reason for firing him.
And Philip Fulmer making this hire, do you believe that sort of proves that he's deserving of this job and could potentially be the Tennessee athletic director passed this 2-year deal that he signed?
Well, I think that you could have argued he should have gotten the job in the first place over John Curry, although Curry has a pretty good resume. The one knock on Curry was that he didn't get along with his high-profile coaches at Kansas State, that being Bill Snyder in football and Frank Martin in basketball. I'm not sure if that's completely fair, but that was the rap on him. But I think Philip Fulmer was certainly ready and able and capable of being the athletic director. And I'm not so sure Pruitt would have been the hire if Fulmer had been the AD from day one of this search. I just think he got to the point where, okay, what's left, and let's go after the best of the candidates that are remaining of the second-tier people. He did not sign a deal that said 2 years. I looked at the contract, the settlement, and what it says is it basically says for an undetermined amount of time. It's been widely reported that it's 2 years. I actually think, Cole, that it's going to be longer than that. I don't think it's going to be only 2 years. I think it'd be hard to hire a coach if the coach said, oh, you're going to be in 2 years, so who's my next AD? I think it'll be at least 3 years. That's an opinion. But in the appointment letter that I obtained within an hour after the press conference, it doesn't say that it's only going to be for 2 years. I think it'll be longer.
Jimmy Himes joining us of WNML in Knoxville, Tennessee. Follow him on Twitter at Jimmy Himes. What have you heard in recruiting so far with Jeremy Pruitt? Because Butch Jones didn't have an issue with that. He was able to recruit and get talent to Knoxville. Yeah. How different are things? And I guess what's just the overall perception of how Jeremy has been recruiting so far?
Okay. When Butch Jones was fired, Tennessee had about 23 commitments, and they were ranked number 6 in the country. And they were ranked number 1 in the SEC in recruiting. Since then, they have lost about 7 commitments. 2 of those commitments, they did not mind losing. In other words, they did not pursue them after they decommitted because they didn't think they were playing well enough to deserve a scholarship to Tennessee. That leaves about 5 of them up there that they really would like to get back in the fold. The most recent decommit was Trey Dean, a very good cornerback out of, I believe it's Hampton, Georgia. So that's the blow. But what they're going to do is, number one, they're going to go back after several of the decommits, including the outstanding offensive lineman, Cade Mays from Knoxville. And they're going to go back after some people that had not been committed to Alabama, but that Pruitt had been recruiting for Alabama. He's already offered at least 4 players that Tennessee was in on some of those, but he's already offered 4 players that I'm aware of to come to Tennessee. And look, here's the thing, too, Cole, about it. He may look at some of the players who are committed to Tennessee, and he might think that guy's not a fit or he's not good enough. And he might actually call and say, look, we'll honor the scholarship, but you'll never play here. Okay? So then that guy ends up going somewhere else. So there's a chance that that could happen. But he's been very active in recruiting. I think he's put together a very good recruiting staff. I think he kept the best recruiter on Tennessee's staff, the best coach, Robert Gillespie. I think that's going to help. This is a younger staff than what Butch Jones had, and it's got more ties to the SEC. I think they're going to do well in recruiting.
Jimmy, great stuff. Appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up soon.
Hey, Cole, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Jimmy Himes, at Jimmy Himes via Twitter, talking Jeremy Pruitt as the new Tennessee head football coach. We'll discuss that a little bit next hour. Ralph Russo of the Associated Press talks some Heisman Trophy college football playoff at 8:20. He's coming up as well. Billy Lucci will talk Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher, and that staff. They got a guy that I thought Tennessee was a lock to get in Jay Graham, who's an excellent recruiter, was in Tallahassee, and he'll go with Jimbo over to College Station. That and more next coming up on Cube Show.